But yeah, there's nothing that says the qualification of those people. It says they must be competent. But what is competent? It's quite hard. It doesn't really specify it. How we approach it. So many people think, oh, I've got to go on external courses, got to pay for this, I've got to do that, register myself with the same sort of qualifications that we do. There's nothing that says you have to.
Growing a business requires a holistic approach that extends beyond sales and marketing. This approach needs alignment among people, processes, and technologies. So if you're a business owner, operations, or finance leader looking to learn growth strategies from your peers and competitors, you're tuned into the right podcast. Welcome to the WBS Podcast, where scalable growth using business systems is our number one priority. Now, here is your host, Sam Gupta.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the WBS Podcast. I'm Sam Gupta, your host and principal consultant at digital transformation consulting firm Elevate IQ. If you plan to acquire ISO or AS, one of the critical steps for this journey would be to go through the internal audit process. But who's responsible for internal audits? Is it the external consultants who will be providing the certifications? Is it the quality department, or is it the department heads? While it may seem counterintuitive, the role of external consultants is not to do the internal audits. The internal auditors are selected from one of the internal teams that is curious about quality and have the communication and cross-functional skills to ensure that necessary issues get locked while explaining the importance of each process steps. In today's episode, our guest, Michael Banner, shares the nuances of internal audit and its importance to get certified. He also discusses where internal audit fits in the certification journey and the role of external consultants. Finally, he outlines the process for selecting an internal auditor, their responsibilities, and the traits of a good internal auditor. Let me introduce Michael to you. Michael is an aerospace and automotive director at NQA Certification Limited, a global UCAS accredited certification body with over 19 years of experience in management system development and deployment. He specializes in the AS9100 and AS9120 aerospace management system standards, but also more widely known standards such as ISO 9001, ISO 14001, and ISO 45001. With that, let's get to the conversation. Hey, Michael, welcome to the show.
Hi, Sam. Good to be here.
Hey, I am super excited to have you. The kind of depth you have in the world of compliance and the world of risk-based thinking, I think this is going to be so fascinating for our listener. How to plan for uncertainties, how to plan for internal audit. Just to kick things off, do you want to start with your personal story and your current focus, Michael?
Okay, short story then. I started this about 20 years ago.
Okay.
One day I went into a friend of mine to answer the phones. They needed someone to support their business just for the day, so I was temping just for a single day.
Yeah.
One day turned into 2 weeks. 2 weeks turned into 20 years, basically. And partway through that journey, I ended up owning part of the business that I was working for at the time. So, yeah, been in certification for 20 years and worked in every single aspect of a certification body. Grew it from nothing to quite a very popular certification body that we ended up selling. So currently I now work for NQA, which is a global certification body that a lot of people would have heard of.
Yeah.
I'm the aerospace and automotive director for that certification body here in the UK, but they're quite large in the USA and Canada also.
Yeah.
I focus really on sort of the aerospace sector at the moment, trying to build the brand, trying to make us more aware. I sit on a lot of panels, sort of the CBMC panels, which regulate the sector as well. So I get great insight into the standards, what's coming up, what's changing.
Yeah.
So I spend a lot of my time sort of networking and things like that. But I probably spend half my time also doing assessments still. I still like doing assessments, mostly around the aerospace schemes.
Yeah.
So AS9100, AS9120. But also still do the 9001 standards and some of the health and safety as well.
That's amazing. So obviously, it's going to be super interesting to dig into those details. But before that, we have one of the standard questions for all of our guests, and that is going to be your perspective on business growth, Michael.
Growth isn't just about money. It's about personal reflection as well, I feel.
Okay.
It's kind of a bit like the question on what's success, really. Success isn't about money.
Yeah.
So really, it's growth in the business is your people. How are they growing?
Yeah.
How's the business sort of flexing in the industry? How it's being made more aware? People, I think, focus a bit too much on the money, but that's not growth to me. You know, personal growth and things like that.
Okay, amazing. So let's get into the internal audit, and I'm pretty sure you are going to have really, really compelling stories that you might be able to share. I'm pretty sure there are going to be some fun stories as well based on the internal audit, especially if people might not be comfortable, familiar with this. So let's. Do you have any specific story that you might be able to share related to internal audit? I don't know when you go for these audits. I don't know what you typically expect people to do, but I am pretty sure you are going to find a lot of surprises when you walk into the facility. So share some stories that are going to be really good learning experience for our listeners.
Yeah, there's not too much that surprises us anymore, to be honest. Quite often when we go in to do assessments and we ask people what are their internal audits, what's the process, what their program,
yeah,
we get a lot of blank faces, and people look at us and they think, well, that's what you're here to do. You're here to internally audit us, and we're not. We're there to assess their entire management system.
Okay.
And people don't really pay enough attention to their own internal audit process.
Yeah.
And sort of speaking from experience, the more emphasis you put on to your internal audits, the more successful your business will be and your management systems as a whole.
Yeah.
Some of the things we find is we'll go in, and quite often there's consultants within the business that have helped organizations get to where they are ready for the certification. And we'll go around and we'll find things. And then the consultant sometimes whispers in our ear and says, I did tell them about that. And I'm like, well, why didn't you raise it in your internal audits? They're like, well, I don't, it makes it look bad. I'm like, no. it's not bad at all. Because now you've got a non-conformance that you've got to fix. Whereas if you identified it before in your internal audits, even if you're fully aware, then you should have raised it. So we get some quite funny perspectives that people have, and they think internal audits is a bad thing. And if they raise findings, that we're going to come down on people, and that's not how it is at all. We want to see effective internal audits finding good things.
Yeah.
The more you find, the more comfortable we are that the management system's being maintained. And it just gives us a fuzzy feeling, I like to say. You know, it's a big part of any business. And there should be a lot more focus on it. And 9 times out of 10, people will plan their audits for the week before we're due in for the assessment. Yeah. So they leave it a whole 12 months before they do their audits. And it's not really the approach they should be taking. It should be looking a bit better planning, you know, 6 months through the year, quarter through the year, things like that.
Okay, so amazing. So I would like to go at least 1, 2, or 3 level deeper into the story. So we want to know who this person is, right? We are trying to understand their underlying motivations. Obviously, you did mention that they did not feel comfortable documenting this issue just because they felt that, you know, this is not probably going to look good. But I can almost guarantee that the executives will not agree with this person, because obviously they can see things from the different lenses. So who was this person in the organization? You know, how many years of experience? What kind of business are we talking about? Is it a manufacturing business? What kind of management are we talking about? Is it very open-minded business or not very open-minded business? So if you could provide some more colors into why these problems happen in the facility, maybe we can find some solutions to these problems, especially the listeners. So can you go 1, 2, or 3 level deeper into either this story or the next story?
Yeah, so quite often it's sort of small to medium-sized manufacturing organizations where they'll bring a consultant in, an external consultant to help them. You're probably talking, you know, 10 employees up to maybe 50. And this one, it was actually in the USA, funny enough, this specific one. But I've had it more than once, in all honesty. It happens quite often. So they'd set out their audit program for the year, covered the whole program for the year. We've gone in to do the assessment, started going through their internal audits, started looking through the records, how detailed they were, you know, and we're kind of looking at them and we're thinking, yeah, these seem okay. There's some good evidence in there. but very little findings. So we sort of think, okay, well, they've either got a really good system or they're not really identifying what they should be and not raising it. So we started going around on the assessment. I think it was probably about a 5-day assessment, if I remember rightly. We're going around and we start seeing really obvious things that should have been picked up.
Yeah.
Things like whiteout on the desk that shouldn't have been on the desk. You know, Tippex, we call it in the UK, but whiteout, I believe.
Yeah.
Which is a big no-no. It's a big no-no in the aerospace scheme. There was sort of products that weren't controlled properly, didn't have tags on them for non-conformities and things like that. So we started tripping up all these things. Quite obvious things that should have been pulled out in people's internal audits.
Yeah.
So we start digging a little bit deeper and then we start to really get a little bit concerned on the number of things we're finding. And then the consultant comes along and whispers in our ear and says, I did tell them about all this, but they didn't listen. I'm like, how did you tell them? And they said, well, when I was doing the internal audits. I said, but it doesn't say that in your internal audits. You had zero findings. And I said, yeah, but I didn't want to make them feel bad about their system. They're trying hard. I'm like, the problem is you've just created a bigger problem.
Yeah.
If you raised something, they could have then dealt with it. The management team could have been aware of it rather than maybe just one person, which is often an internal quality manager, that type of thing that the consultant could be working with. So the top leadership and the management team are looking at their internal audits and they're thinking, wow, everything's great. Things are working as they should be. Everyone's following the procedures. So then we start raising things that should have been picked up.
Yeah.
And it then started raising alarm bells for them. And they started looking at the consultant thinking, hang on, we're paying you for this.
Yeah.
So it actually backfired on them in the end because it made their reputation look pretty weak because they weren't really raising things. So what that ended up doing is raising major non-conformities because then we had lack of confidence in their internal audit process. So they got quite a lot of findings based around that. And all it was is you should have documented your internal audits properly and been strict on yourself. You should be stricter on yourselves than we are. Yeah. And I was talking to a few people before where they have external consultants in and they've had really, really hard consultants that go really deep and just they get a little bit nitpicky, as we call it, right? It's really things that we wouldn't. So then we sort of bring this up with a leadership team and we sort of say, you know, one of them that I was with a couple of weeks ago, I think they had three sites, manufacturing again. There was about 80 people across the three sites.
Yeah.
And they had an external consultant in. They were, I think the audit was maybe 5 days, their own internal audit program.
Yeah.
And I believe it was an external consultant, but he was a qualified auditor. I believe he raised about 50 findings. And we go, whoa, what are we walking into? And it's quite an experienced organization that I've dealt with for quite a few years. And we start going through their audits and looking at all these non-conformities and seeing how they're being addressed and things like that. And some of them are really, really nitpicky things that we wouldn't raise. So I started speaking to the leadership team and they said, we actually told them to go very hard.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if we start, we're going to have to report this, that you've got 40 internal non-conformities, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but then you start to question how's the management system working. And then they literally said, yeah, we told them to go very deep, very nitpicky, the slightest thing, so that we could really embrace it and really improve.
Give us some example of the nitpicking so that people can understand, you know, what is going to be a nitpicking versus what is going to be a real issue. Do you have an example of what things they,
Yeah, so obviously it's different depending on the standard. This was specifically for the aerospace scheme. So it is a stricter scheme than general ISO 9001. So we are very more critical over it. There were just some things that were kind of outside of the remit of the audit, a lot of the things. It might have been maybe one document wasn't stamped, but then they looked at 20 others and they were all stamped. I think that was one of the things. They even went into things like there was two gauges in the fridge for calibration and they read like 1 degree out or something like that. We're like, oh, hang on, like difference. It was very, very a bit too strict.
Yeah.
But that's what they wanted. That's what they wanted. And they wanted to know every little bit. I can't think off the top of my head all of the types of things, but we were just going through them thinking this is quite a strict audit. But that's good. It's a good process. But you don't want to go too strict because they've got to then fix all those things. Because the bigger problem isn't finding all the non-conformances, it's what you do about them and are you fixing them? And that's where we'll start to look at. So they had this huge list that they were working through that was probably creating a bit too much for a problem because they had all these little bits to close out. But that's what they asked for. That's what they wanted. So as long as they're addressing them, we're fine with that. But we came away with zero findings. And I think this was 11 days altogether that we were on site.
Yeah.
So it worked. It was very effective for them. It worked.
Okay, amazing. So maybe touch a little bit about how the internal audit fits into the overarching process, because I don't know how many of my listeners are going to be familiar with the certification process. So number one, describe the overarching process and where the internal audit is going to fit into that. And then how do you identify the person who is actually doing the auditing, who is going to be typically, is there any specific criteria in terms of who should be responsible for the internal audit? Do they go through any specific training so that they have enough tools under their belt to identify what is going to be nitpicking, what is going to be tool strength? You know, you don't want to come across as somebody who's doing things just for the sake of doing things without explaining the real risks. If you explain why these things matter for aerospace, I can almost guarantee that everybody is just going to follow. The real problem here would be the internal person who is doing this. They are not trained enough to be able to communicate the vision in terms of what company is trying to do. So do you want to describe the overarching process, number one, of where the internal audit fits into the process, and how are these people being trained, and who is the person who's the right fit for the internal audit?
Okay. So the idea behind the internal audits is to ensure your management system is working effectively.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going in for 1 day, 2 days a year, and we do a very kind of broad snapshot of the management system.
Yeah.
We can't be there looking at everything. So we could walk off site and something could fail. It's quite simple. So it's very important for organizations to be checking themselves, making sure they're compliant with their own system. So the whole idea of the internal audits is to take that approach to monitor certain aspects of your system to make sure things are working as they should. People are following procedures.
Yeah.
Things are being adhered to, because if they're being adhered to, then the end result should be satisfied customers. That's the idea behind it. Okay. Yeah. With each standard slightly different in what they require and how the audits are to be processed, but they all follow a similar aspect, really. You've got to check that you're compliant with your own system requirements. Yeah. So procedures you've created, any forms that need to fill in, that's your own requirements that you've defined.
Yeah.
But then there's also the standard requirements. So you should be checking the standard as well. So do your procedures meet the standard? Yeah. So there's kind of a two-way street. And there's other things such as the aerospace scheme, which brings in regulatory requirements.
Okay. Yeah?
And environmental standards, you've got to check regulatory requirements that you're compliant. So the process is the same, but sometimes there's slightly different things that you need to check. Okay. The strange bit is there's nothing in the standards that says the competence level of the people doing these audits, which is where you create a problem. Okay. The standards say that people should be impartial of the process. Okay. So just for argument's sake, if I'm in purchasing, I shouldn't then go and audit purchasing.
Yeah.
I'm not impartial to that process. And I might say, all right, yeah, that's okay. Yeah. You start to glass over things. So
you
would maybe go and audit sales, just for example, things like that. So as long as it's impartial, okay, that's what needs to be done, which can create a problem for smaller businesses.
Yeah.
They've got people. So when they try and do it themselves, which is perfectly fine, they wear many hats. Okay, so I haven't necessarily got someone dedicated to purchasing. So, you know, less than 10 people or something, they might do a little bit of purchasing, they might do a bit of selling, they might do a bit of picking. So that impartiality can be a struggle, which is where the benefit of external consultants can come in, because they can be totally impartial to everything. Okay, but yeah, there's nothing that says the qualification of those people. It says they must be competent. But what is competent? It's quite hard. It doesn't really specify it. How we approach it. So many people think, oh, I've got to go on external courses, got to pay for this, I've got to do that, register myself with the same sort of qualifications that we do. There's nothing that says you have to. How we approach it is the quality of the audits, in all honesty. If they're producing good audits, they're having good findings, they're covering the areas, and we're not raising anything that they maybe should have caught, you know, if we're going in and raising 15 findings or something and they've raised zero in their internal audits, we then start to question the quality of those audits.
Yeah.
Just for argument's sake, that one we was doing the other week where they had sort of 40 findings, you know, they've raised lots and we've raised zero. So it didn't, although the person was qualified, he was a qualified auditor, I wasn't going to question that because the quality of the audits was very, very good and we didn't raise anything. So it was irrelevant whether he was fully qualified or not, as in he's gone on lead auditor courses and things like that. It's the quality of the audits. So some people really do get a little bit concerned what courses they have to go on. There are courses which are beneficial, but if you've got a lot of experience in, say, a quality environment, or even from a totally different sector where you're used to performing audits, could be accounting, things like that, doing checks, inspections, things like that. You can have a lot of the traits that are needed. There's certain standards that we have to follow when we're auditing that we would kind of maybe look for. What's their approach? Are they logical thinkers? Are they nice about how they go about their audits? You know, diplomatic, you know, there's certain things. They have to still be objective. You know, that's a key bit. So it's smaller business can be a struggle.
Yeah.
Which is why they do often get consultants in who maybe have got those qualifications. But what we do find is people maybe went on a lead auditor course maybe 20 years ago, might have been to the old revision of the standard, and they haven't updated their knowledge, which can be a problem. So we can get into some battles with people who start questioning us. Like we have to do so many hours of training. We have to re-qualify. We have to keep submitting evidence and audit logs to retain our approvals. And then we get people questioning us, challenging us on the standards and things like that. That can get quite interesting as well. Get a little bit confrontational. But it's about showing that you're covering the full system, in all honesty.
So that's very interesting. So number one, obviously, you know, I am going to peel a little bit more on the competence. So obviously it's very open-ended that I don't know who is appointing these guys. Is it going to be the company who is going to say that, no, I mean, I trust this person, they are the most qualified for this role, and I am asking them to be the internal auditor. And if they do that, obviously, I don't know if as part of the standard or the submission, do you have to justify the person who was responsible for internal auditing? Are they really qualified to do that? So do they need to submit their bio as part of the submission? And if they do, then have you seen any cases where, let's say, the approval bodies felt that the person wasn't competent? Because whatever I'm seeing here, it's not how I define the competence, even though I did not provide you enough variables to define the competence. But in my eyes, the person wasn't confident to begin with, and you still went with it and you submitted. But, you know, you are not going to get certification because, you know, you should have, you know, appointed somebody else. So what is the selection process of the internal auditor? And if you may have one or two examples where, let's say, one internal auditor was really good versus the other internal auditor was terrible, and he or she could be terrible because they did not probably have enough experience, or they did not have enough experience in being how to be objective or how to communicate or how to work in the cross-functional manner, because this requires a lot of collaboration, a lot of leadership skills. It's not easy job to be an internal auditor. So define how is the selection process. And number two, the bad case as well as the good case of the internal auditor.
Okay, so what will often happen is they will look inside their own business first, and they'll look for people that have got a bit of passion about them for the quality aspects.
Okay,
it's not, you know, I tell most people, oh, I'm an auditor, and they fall asleep. I love it. There's a lot of people that do love it, and there's a lot. It's a certain caliber of person that just likes to dig deep and just show interest in things and to understand things. The big part of it is just asking questions. Do people seem curious about things? So if you're looking at your employees internally and thinking who could be good for our audits, look for those inquisitive people.
Okay.
Those people that attention to detail is a good, you know, who are those people that really like to make sure things are done correctly, but are always asking the questions, thinking of the bigger picture. Because all auditing is about asking questions. It's all questions keep asking the questions, keep digging deeper. How's this? Why is that? How's that happen? Things like that. So anyone like that, some organizations, and the one I was doing the last 2 days, actually, I think they're 10 employees, and every single one of them was an auditor. They decided within their business that they wanted everyone to get involved. Okay. Now, it was quite an interesting approach because not many people, some people don't like auditing. And obviously, if I'm just, for example, I'm a new graduate or something, and I'm maybe an introvert, I may not actually like questioning the leadership business. It can be quite a challenge.
Yeah.
You know, are they comfortable with asking those questions of people that are maybe their bosses, their superiors and their peers and things like that?
Yeah.
But it worked very well in this organization, I must admit. And they were quite critical of each other.
Yeah.
But it worked very well. It was very effective what they'd done, and they raised some good findings. They all understood what the process is, and it worked very, very well. Strangely enough, administration people can be very good internal auditors.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's quite unusual. We find them to be that inquisitive person. You know, they see all this paperwork coming into them that they process, but they don't really know how it works and why that paperwork's there and things like that. So they actually make quite good auditors. They like to learn things. I've seen some organizations, especially like construction businesses.
Yeah.
What they sometimes do, which can work quite effectively, is they take the people from site.
Okay.
And they get them to do the audits in the office, and they take people from the office and they get them to audit things from the site. Not only is it good from an auditing perspective, because they get all inquisitive, but they understand the business more.
Yep.
And then they start to appreciate what they do in their job role that impacts other people. You know, maybe they produce this bit of paperwork and it goes off and they don't see it again, and they don't appreciate that paperwork can be very important to someone else further down the line.
Yeah.
A good way, if people do work around and share the audits, get as many people involved, it is a good way for kind of bringing people together a little bit more and helping people understand how the whole business gels together. That can work very well. It's not just quality people. Yeah. Quality is everyone's job nowadays. Yeah. It's not a person sitting in a quality inspection lab or the quality manager, which is quite typical. Yeah, we see a lot of quality managers being the internal auditors. But then we start to question how impartial is that? So if they're managing the entire system, should they really be going off and doing all of the audits? Yeah, we start to question those type of things. Some of the funniest thing, I'll say it's not funny, but what we often get is people that haven't even tried to educate themselves on what the audit process is. And we go in an assessment first time and we say, where's your audits? And they'll hand us one piece of paper, and it will have all the clauses of the standard there, or even just the high level, and they just tick next to each one.
Yeah.
And they say, here we go, that's my audit, I checked it. I'm like, well, what's that? It doesn't inspire confidence.
Yeah.
We need to see there's some evidence, what you've looked at, what you've questioned, things like that.
Yeah.
Not a tick box. A tick box inspire confidence, especially then when we go off and we find loads of different things, you know. I could have ticked that box in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean I did anything. So they need to just think about how they're going to present their data.
Yeah.
How they present their records. What something that works quite well that I've seen is people take the procedures. They'll literally print out a fresh copy, might be a flow chart, to a diagram, or could just be words in a procedure. And that can be their audit checklist. And they go around and they make notes against each part of their procedure. That can be quite good, quite simple as well. They're not writing lots. Yeah, they're just putting some key information on there, and it shows us that they've looked at it. You know, we start seeing some job numbers, we see some employee names, purchase order numbers, things like that. It shows us that they've actually looked at some records. That can be a very simple method that people adopt for their internal audits.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about the accountability. So it seems just all over the place. I mean, I don't know what is the real guideline here. So it seems like in one company you had 10 people who were all doing the audit. So I don't know how they distributed the responsibility, what they presented, were they taking turn every day in terms of who is doing or going to be doing auditing on what day. I mean, how is this accountability shared when you have these team-based internal auditors? Are you not going to have their signature when you have the submission, whoever is doing the, because again, you need to know who to ask the questions because you need to know that person, right?
Yeah. So generally there's going to be someone there that's conducting everything. Okay. Which in this case of this specific organization, they had an internal quality manager who happened to be the IT manager, funny enough.
Okay.
Which is quite interesting. But what they done is they basically sat down once a year as a management team. So they had the leadership of the organization, like the CEO and CFO, that type of person. They come up with their audit plan based on the risks that they saw of their business. They set out a plan for 3 years. Okay. They highlighted each of their processes, which they should have done. So they should have, it was basically like sales, purchasing, things like that. And they just, what they done is they just took someone else from a different department that had nothing to do with what they were doing. So they took one of the guys from the warehouse.
Okay.
Said, right, you're going to go and audit sales. So they literally put him on the audit program. So it said February, okay, Joe is going to go and do sales. Okay, so they set that out. So the quality manager in this organization, or quality representative, he was making sure that Joe turned up on that day to do that audit. Okay. Their system, they built in automatic email reminders, actually, which was quite clever. You don't need to go to that kind of elaboration, but it worked for them. And so basically a month before the audit was due, an email went direct to Joe to tell him he needs to prepare himself for an audit. So then he went to the quality rep on the day of the assessment that he planned, and he basically gave him the checklist that they'd kind of produced. It was quite a loose checklist.
Yeah,
because you don't want it too tight. If it's too tight, it just becomes a tick exercise and they're just going through the motion. So it's a little bit, it was fairly loose in its sense. So it kind of gave some high level things that they should be checking. But then the guy, he just filled in his audit report checklist, made notes against each of the things and was quite critical, and he raised quite a few findings. Okay, so then those come back. So he presented that with his audit report and his findings to the quality representative, and they basically determined whether they were valid or not. Yeah, sometimes things are misinterpreted, especially if you're not involved in that section. And then if they were justified findings, they were raising them in their system. Okay, and then Joe was basically signing off the audit, and then that was his job done. He wasn't then responsible for closing out the findings. That wasn't his job. He was there to find the issues, present them, and then just walk away. And then he was audited a couple of months later himself. So he knew the process, what he was going through.
So that's very interesting. Number one, you know, obviously I'm going to have some more questions there, clarifying questions that I would like to get answered. So let's say if I'm the warehouse guy, I have no clue how sales works. I've never worked in the sales department. All of a sudden, you are asking me to audit sales. So am I going to get some sort of training in terms of what kind of customers we have? What kind of business model do we have? What is the sales process? How salespeople work? How sales works? Or am I simply going blind and, you know, just talking to some random people based on a checklist and trying to find the findings? And by the way, even if I find the findings, then I have to submit that to the quality manager. So initially you said that the internal audit needs to be unbiased, because if you are going to be associated with a specific department, obviously you are probably not going to be as unbiased. So in this particular case, the quality manager is actually using his or her judgment to close the issues that might not be relevant, because, you know, they could close some of the issues that could be potential issues, but maybe they closed it. So what am I missing here overall? Number one, the person, you know, I don't know how the warehouse person is being trained. And number two, there is a little bit of judgment involved here. So do you see any sort of gaps in the process typically?
No. Because so this particular organization, what they had within their procedure was how they're defining who an internal auditor would be.
Okay.
So this specific organization said you need to go on an external auditor course.
Okay.
Okay. Which is similar to what we do. Or to be a qualified auditor internally, you have to do their own. They've got like a half a day training that they created based on someone's knowledge of going off on external training. Okay. And then they had to shadow someone else, who is already a qualified auditor according to their system.
Okay.
I believe it's for two, to audits. Okay. So they basically shadowed. So it was a bit of mentoring as it went along. And then they deemed that person competent enough to go and perform the internal audits.
Yeah.
That's what they done. Okay. I say other people do it different. Some people say you must go on an external auditor course. Yeah. Or internal auditor course. Some people get people in to deliver some training. So it really varies in what they want to do. As part of what we do, we'll assess it and we say, okay, how's that work? Does that seem to work? Sounds good. And the proof's always in the pudding. Yeah. So if the audit quality is good, then we can say, yeah, okay, that seems to be working okay for you. Okay. So this particular person, yeah, they performed their audit, came back to the quality manager. And then the findings basically get raised on a database that they have.
Okay.
Yeah. This person came back and he said, there we go. I've found these five issues. And I've also found two recommendations, things that I think could be improved.
Okay.
Yeah. They get collated on the database. And then the management team, along with the quality rep, would then assess them and say, yeah, okay, this person's going to then close that out. They basically get fed back to the sort of the sales manager in this specific case,
okay,
to deal with. Yeah. So this is your process. These are the findings we found that were wrong with it. What are you going to do to fix it? So the quality manager's there just to kind of support the process. They weren't coming up with the corrective actions. They weren't coming up with the fixes. They were there just to guide the different departments in what they've got to do to make sure the system is working. Yeah, and keep progressing.
Okay, amazing. So that's it for today, Michael. Do you have any last minute closing thoughts or remarks for our listeners?
Okay. I think one of the biggest things that is kind of what I see in organizations is that they fear the audit process.
Yeah.
They get very closed. They don't want to tell us too much. But in all honesty, you'll get more out of the system if you're very open. We're often there, although we're there to be impartial and we can't necessarily consult. We've got a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge that you can tap into. So ask questions and be open. Don't try and hide things because we inevitably find it. Yeah. So just be very open, and it's better to be open and honest, put your hands up, and we can kind of work with you to try and sort of get through those issues. But the actual process itself can be very rewarding. I've seen it transform businesses from one-man band or mum-and-pup shops, as sometimes they're called, just one or two people, into very successful, very large businesses. And a particular client of mine, I remember the first day going in to do an assessment, and his office was in the field, and it was in a porter cabin, like a caravan type thing.
Yeah.
And it was freezing cold, windy, wet. But the guy had such charisma, and he put so much emphasis onto the audit process. Although it was very small, he only had five employees, he really embraced it. And he ended up paying for me to go in more often because he found such value in the entire process.
Yeah.
He said, I'm going to pay for you to come in twice a year, not once a year. And we done that. And sort of about 12 years later, he ended up selling the business for quite a few million pounds. He's now retired and probably a little bit older than myself, with nice cars and things like that. So it was great to see someone embrace it and make a success. And it's not ISO didn't save this guy's company, didn't make him a huge success, because he's obviously a big part of it. But he's always said that because we embraced it and we're always looking for those continual improvements, that it kept pushing us. It kept us looking forward and looking for improvements, he said. And it's the best thing I ever done. So. Yeah, that's a takeaway, I would say. Embrace the process. Don't be scared of it.
Okay, amazing. And my personal takeaway from this conversation is going to be that these standards are there for a reason. Okay, the more you understand them, the more you embrace them, the better your processes are going to be. If you are simply going to be there to nitpick without explaining why these things matter to employees, they are simply going to take the checkbox approach as well. So on that note, I really want to thank you for your time, Michael. This has been a fascinating conversation.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I cannot thank our guests enough for coming on the show, for sharing their knowledge and journey. I always pick up learnings from our guests, and hopefully you learned something new today. If you want to learn more about Michael, follow him on LinkedIn. He is available at the LinkedIn handle Michael Venner ISO Certification Expert. It's MICHALVENNER ISO CERTIFICATION EXPERT. Links and more information will also be available in the show notes. If anything in this podcast resonated with you and your business, you might want to check other related episodes, including the interview with Derek Hall, who describes the importance of ISO compliance and why it's necessary for shops to grow. Also, the interview with Aaron Tyson, who shares his journey to AS certification for his shop. Also, don't forget to subscribe and spread the word among folks with similar backgrounds. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please review and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform or DM me on any social channels. I'll try my best to respond personally and make sure you get help. Thank you, and I hope to catch you on the next episode of the WBS Podcast.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the WBS Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you never miss an episode. For more information on growth strategies for SMBs using ERP and digital transformation, check out our community at wbs.rocks. We'll see you next time.